This podcast is exclusively for Australian medical practitioners. The content discussed is not appropriate for non-medical professionals. Please listen to our disclaimer provided at the end of the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Medical Forum podcast, where we talk about the latest news, the big issues, and the best ideas impacting the healthcare sector here in Western Australia. Welcome back to Medical Forum. We're joined this week by Dr. Joe Kostrich, Medical Forum's clinical editor, who will be sitting down to talk about improving heart disease outcomes with Perth radiologist, Dr. Connor Murray.
Hello and welcome to the Medical Forum podcast. My name's Dr. Joe Kostrich. I'm a GP and clinical editor of Medical Forum. And it's a great pleasure to be joined again today by Perth radiologist, Dr. Connor Murray. Connor, welcome back to the podcast.
Good morning, Joe. Thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me yet again.
So today we're going to be talking about improving outcomes with coronary CT. Now, I remember in the late 90s, the coronary CT scanners first being introduced to this country, I think by Ross Walker, the cardiologist, who a lot of people probably know from his media appearances as well. And I also recall at the time, as often the case with pioneers, it wasn't exactly welcomed with open arms, but literally a quarter of a century later, it's becoming a major part of cardiac investigation, diagnosis and treatment. So perhaps the first thing which may confuse some people out there is what are the differences between calcium score and CTCA or CT coronary angiography?
Yeah, very good question, and one that I probably deal with every day. And just to harken back on what you mentioned with the first CT service in WA was quite an exotic machine. It was called an electron beam CT machine, which were developed in the 70s by Agatston, a name that you might know, an engineer and cardiologist from the west coast of the US. So those machines were a one-trick pony. They would take your calcium score, and were actually very good machines, the fairly high radiation, though their temporal resolution was higher than even now. And so gave a very good depiction of calcium. And it's fair to say, I think in the 90s, the role of calcium scoring was not as well as established as now. And I think that perhaps led to the controversy. I remember as a young doctor, the pushback in the articles, I think based on the level of science supporting the use of the test. So calcium scoring evidence has grown substantially since then, and it's fair to say it's now part of the mainstream in terms of categorising risk for your patients who are on clinical risk scores at intermediate risk. So as most of the listeners will know, you have a patient who has a clinical risk score that doesn't quite reach the criteria for statin therapy but is not normal and is not low. So often calcium scoring would be used, and that is a CAT scan that does not require an injection of dye. It's a relatively low-dose scan. It just takes a second, and it will reveal any calcified spots in the coronary arteries as being white. The score doesn't have any units, and it's derived simply by counting how many pixels are white and weighted by how white they are or how dense they are on the CT machine. And that's calcium scoring, and that is, you know, reasonably strongly supported by authoritative bodies as an appropriate test for intermediate risk patients when you need guidance for use of statins or not. Mm-hmm. So the coronary CT is an angiogram, and that requires an injection of iodinated contrast, the same contrast you would use for other CAT scans. And so it gives extra information. The main use and appropriateness for coronary CT thus far has been to rule out stenosis or obstructive coronary artery disease. And in that regard, using a threshold of greater than 50% as positive, coronary CT is 99% sensitive. And the specificity is in the mid-80s. So a very good test, and in fact superior to stress echo for that purpose. So for the patient with atypical chest pain or, for example, palpitations or shortness of breath in whom you think the likelihood of obstructive coronary artery disease is not high, sort of for those low to intermediate risk patients, it effectively excludes it with such a high sensitivity. And that test has really grown almost exponentially, and that's based on the back of very good science. And so much so that in the UK, for example, you cannot, you're not at liberty to request a stress echo for atypical chest pain. You have to request a coronary CT or nothing first. And in the US, the most recent American Heart Association guidelines recognise coronary CT as a 1A indication, a class 1A indication, or the highest level of evidence for atypical chest pain, and stress echo as a 1B. That's not to say there isn't a potential complementary role, and particularly in patients who have known obstructive coronary artery disease, or in patients who have a coronary CT or a calcium score showing extensive heavy calcium, in which case you can have trouble seeing through the calcium and you will get poorer specificity with the coronary CT. So I wouldn't want to say that coronary CT is always the first test for ruling out obstructed CAD, but usually it is.
So it's certainly compared to some years ago, it's moved in that direction. Yeah. Is it, and obviously when one oversimplifies anything, it is oversimplified, but is it sort of fair to say that the calcium score is more is a screening type test, whereas the CT coronary angiogram is a diagnostic test?
Yeah, correct. CT coronary angiogram for symptoms and calcium scoring for asymptomatic people for risk stratification. Now, there's a little bit of grayness at the area, and calcium scoring has previously, but has previously been promoted for symptomatic patients in that its sensitivity for obstructive CAD is reasonably high. But it is now, there's such a better test now with 99% sensitivity. Most guidelines now say it's inappropriate for symptoms. Does coronary CT angiography have a role in risk stratification in asymptomatic patients?
Right.
And the answer is increasingly yes. So if you look at authoritative guidelines, the Australian guidelines do not recommend it, but they are 7 years old now. European and American guidelines recommend it as having an intermediate strength level of evidence, and it's on this basis. So what causes coronary events, so, you know, acute coronary events, is not the calcified plaque by and large. It is the non-calcified plaque, colloquially known as the soft plaque. That's what causes the problems. And we know that most heart attacks occur from non-stenotic lesions. So how do you see those lesions non-invasively? Well, you can't on a calcium score. So a calcium score is merely a surrogate for how much soft plaque you might have.
Right.
You do see them on a CT coronary angiogram, because you outline them, you can outline the wall and see them very well, and increasingly well as CT technology has improved over the years. Now, how much science is behind that? I think probably the most provocative paper was the so-called Scott Hart trial, which had a relatively large number of subjects who were randomised to usual care or having CT coronary angiography. And these were people who presented to emergency departments in Scotland with atypical chest pain, deserving of admission and further investigation. So there was a curious result, and a head-to-head for those who had CT coronary angiography versus invasive coronary angiography didn't show significant differences in primary endpoints, but what it showed is in long-term follow-up that the patients who went on to have CT coronary angiography and not invasive coronary angiography first up, they did better. They lived longer, they lived better, less coronary events. So it could only be surmised from that data as it wasn't the strength of CT as ruling out obstructive coronary artery disease over invasive coronary artery angiography. It was in fact that CT coronary angiography shows non-calcified plaque. Okay. And so patients were being diagnosed with non-calcified plaque who wouldn't have been on invasive coronary angiography and were being treated with statins and having better outcomes. So that's the presumption. There's a larger, more targeted Scott Hart 2 trial, results expected this year, which I would, you know, it's likely this is going to confirm the fact that a CT coronary angiogram in people who, not anybody, but people who are at some risk of coronary artery disease is going to be a good test in terms of risk stratification. And the kind of level from memory we're talking about is its predictive power of poor players. So people who are going to have events is, 10 times stronger than a calcium score. So this is a big bang. And I think we watch with interest to see this next paper come out, which I suspect will confirm that CT coronary angiography is actually a very useful test for risk stratification. Yeah, I wanted to elaborate a bit more on non-calcified plaque or soft plaque.
Because that's not picked up by the CAC score.
Exactly, yeah. So the best term is non-calcified plaque because within that, non-invasive imaging cannot reliably tell whether it is fatty or fibrous or what mixture of either of those it is. And we know from med school that the vulnerable plaques, or those vulnerable to complication and then obstruction, are the fatty plaques, and particularly those with a thin fibrous wall. But even more so, the most vulnerable plaques are those that are inflamed.
Right.
So CT can show that, particularly the highest end CT machines. They can show the non-calcified plaque. They can show that which is thick and full of low density lipid, and they can show which is inflamed. And this is relatively new.
So it can show that it's inflamed on the CT scan.
Absolutely. Wow. It can show it's inflamed in identical way you can show an appendix is inflamed on a CT scan. All the features we look at. So it essentially edema about the lesion.
Okay.
And there's more than a modicum of work showing that, so much so that an AI product developed in the UK is now approved and for clinical use, as is one in the US. We may or may not, I'm not sure, have a TGA-approved product, but where we're coming to is I think that will be the most important metric is, do you have inflamed plaque? And that's going to be something that we're all becoming increasingly aware of over the coming years.
I mean, ultimately, with cardiac disease, we've been good at finding proxies such as cholesterol and plus such as calcium, and they're important, but we've still never quite cracked the nut of, well, why do you find these people who've had no risk factors suddenly drop dead of a heart attack? And I think what you're saying there is if we can really see what's going on underneath the surface and see what's going on in the arteries, that's going to aid with diagnosis and earlier treatment. Is that essentially it?
Yeah, what I foresee at least is that coronary CT will be a routine screening test, much like your cervical or colon or whatnot at age X, and it's a overall considered safe test, a routine test now, and it will reveal what your soft plaque burden is and what the nature of that soft plaque is and its vulnerability, and lead to much better outcomes, and I think that's almost inevitable.
So you mentioned that the Australian guidelines haven't changed in the last 7 years. Mm. Are they on the table for the next few years? And if so, do you sort of see, using your crystal ball, that we might move in the direction that sounds like, you know, Europe and the USA have gone?
Yeah, I emailed the authors and they said that it's being reconsidered presently. They certainly didn't give me a date.
Sure, but as they won't.
Yeah, exactly. But the wheels turn more slowly here, I think, because of the lack of resources. But I would have thought we're going to almost certainly fall in line with the following. One is that CT coronary angiography is the first and best test for atypical symptoms, low to intermediate risk of obstructive coronary artery disease. Now, what will be interesting is how much reference they give to CT as a risk, CT coronary angiography as a risk stratifier, whether they hop up to the American and UK guidelines or whether they stay more conservative, and that is what I'd be able to predict.
Mm. So do you have any particular ideas as to where, bring it back more locally in WA, we might be going over the next 3 to 5 years? Obviously, in some respects, we're in the hands of national guidelines, but we also can do our own thing over here sometimes.
Yeah. Certainly in my clinical practice, there's a substantial number of referrers who are using CT coronary angiography, so the injection with revelation of the soft plaque, as a risk stratifier. So cardiologists and GPs who are, I guess, at the edge of the science and who are using. So there would be dozens of such scans in Perth being done a day for that purpose, rightly or wrongly. And then the use of CT for ruling out obstructive coronary artery disease is widespread. There probably would be 50 to 100 done in Perth a day, but increasingly so every year, and increasingly replacing stress echo for many circumstances, and almost eliminating now stress radionuclide studies. I think that they're very rare now.
Mm, mm.
So the data graphs show now CT is, on a trajectory where it will greatly overtake stress echo, and that radionuclide is almost dead for that purpose.
So, I mean, I suppose to that extent it's disruptive. I mean, when I started out in medicine in this town, at that stage it was the first time that GPs could refer for exercise, stress tests and echoes. They weren't even doing stress echoes in those days. And that was sort of radical. And then the stress echoes came in. And really what I'm hearing is that at some point in the foreseeable future, stress echo and the standard stress test will become effectively almost obsolete because people will be going straight to CT angiography.
Yeah, the standard sort of treadmill.
For diagnosis, that is.
Yeah, correct. The standard stress treadmill test, I believe, will be almost obsolete unless you don't have adequate access to coronary CT or stress echo because of its specificity is and sensitivity are quite low. Stress echo will always be there and be strong, but it will be used where local expertise favours stress echo over coronary CT or where, for example, you've had your coronary CT, you had your stenosis diagnosed and treated medically or with a stent, but you're getting symptoms again. And we know from the coronary CT there were segments that were hard to see because of dense calcium, for example. Or also there will be, on occasion, reason to want to know just how much of the heart is ischemic in a single test rather than just the anatomy. So it's a little bit complicated, but it still will be widely used.
It'll have its role, but definitely. It may be a little bit more niche in specific circumstances.
For sure.
Which will be a major change from where we are. And I suppose we're in transition at the moment.
Yeah.
So to bring us back to our crystal ball, what do you see in terms of potential for improved coronary outcomes over the next 5 to 10 years or so if we go down the sort of path that we look like we might be going down?
Sure. Well, the first thing, if I may become political, is we need a rebate for GPs to request this test. So as a GP, you can request a test for a narrowing in an artery or a plaque for any artery in the body apart from two arteries, and being the right and left coronary artery.
Right.
Secondly, you're the people who by and large see the patient who comes in and has got some, is that indigestion? Is this chance it's angina, but probably not? And you know what I'd love? I'd love a simple test that's affordable that just tells me yes or no and with 99% sensitivity. And there is one, and there has been, and if you're a GP in Canada or New Zealand or the UK or Germany or South Africa, you can request and the patient will get the appropriate rebate and off you go because it's the perfect GP test.
Yeah.
But not in Australia, and I'm not going to speculate why that is. You can speculate yourself.
Could have something to do with massive budget deficits, but anyway.
Exactly. So you need to be a specialist, so the GP's not in a position to request, but your psychiatrist can and get a rebate. So there you go. So I think that
it's all in your heart rather than it's all in your head. Goodness gracious
exactly.
me.
So I think that's going to make a big difference in terms of the availability of the test to the right people. But beyond that, I think the plaque characterization in symptomatic or asymptomatic people saying, okay, sure, your LDL is 1.8 and we're going all right, but hang on, you've got inflamed coronary plaque. This is really a ticking time bomb. So we need to get it to 1.4 or below. We need to consider using newer agents to complement that. And you really need to tighten up your risk factors. So just picking out the worst players in and being more aggressive.
Right. So, look, as we wrap up, Connor, is there any other points that you'd like to make that we haven't covered? And have you got any final thoughts or messages for the listeners?
Yeah, perhaps just what about other tests for looking at plaque characteristics? There is a suite of other tests. For example, MRI or PET scan non-invasively or invasively endovascular ultrasound. Now, EUS has substantial limitations due to availability, expense, expertise, and then you've got a catheter or a wire inside your coronary artery. So that's really never going to be used widely. MRI has promise, but the MRI is still limited by spatial resolution. So it has trouble beyond the larger arteries. And also there is training is a big problem, standardization, etc. So that's not going anywhere soon. PET scan's interesting, and I'm not a nuclear physician, but I think that of the other tests has the greatest promise, and I couldn't comment whether it's being used at the moment, not to my knowledge, but I think radionuclide techniques may also become of great utility in plaque characterisation, but that's a watch this space. But beyond that, if I can just summarise, if you have an asymptomatic patient who's of intermediate risk, sort of low to intermediate risk, who you're considering statins, say they've just got a strong family history, calcium scoring is the by the book way to go at the moment. You'll never be criticised for that. I think now you wouldn't be criticised for CT coronary angiography, recognising you're sort of operating at the edge of science with only intermediate strength science. But you are amongst many friends at the moment, but that is a little more radical at the moment. But I'm pretty sure we'll know in a year or so, we'll have the data to show that's the way to go. And for symptoms, probably CT coronary angiography first. But if you're not sure, say they've got known coronary artery disease, previous known angina obstruction, or something funny about the patient, please defer to a cardiologist, because on occasion stress echo is the more useful way to go first. But for your average punter who comes in with some funny symptoms or palpitations, then it's the CT coronary angiogram. That's the way to go.
Excellent, Connor. Thanks you so much for coming in today and having this chat and sharing your knowledge with the listeners.
You're very welcome, Joe, and thanks again.
Don't forget to like and follow us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn to stay up to date with the latest in medical news from around WA. This podcast may include the views or recommendations of third parties and does not necessarily reflect the views of Medical Forum. We assume no legal liability or responsibility for the accuracy, currency or completeness of the information. This podcast is not intended to act as medical advice, and while we make every effort to make sure the information in this podcast is as accurate and informative as possible, you should obtain relevant advice to your specific circumstances from a healthcare professional. We do not accept any liability for any injury, loss, or damage caused by the use of the information provided in our podcast.